The Feel Better Station for Warrington Hospital.
This is Radio General.
Now, the final hooter.
Go, go, Lebanon.
Hang on, where are you getting this from?
Go, Lebanon.
You can't just shout for Lebanon. There's 13 other teams in the World Cup.
Oh, I'm hooked on the song. I've been singing it for about a week.
What about Flower of Scotland and the New Zealand national anthem?
No, it's not as catchy as Go, Go, Lebanon.
And the Papua New Guinea one. They actually get Papua New Guinea in the lyrics.
They do. That's clever.
I like that. I like that.
And I do like the way the Fijians have a huddle in the middle and sing along.
Man, you, so did the Australians.
What,
they had
what was that about? What was that?
Well, they used to have the equivalent of almost a hacker or something way back in the 1930s.
It was boring.
I don't know. I quite liked it. It was stirring. It was enough to put the fear in England, wasn't it?
It was, but I found it boring. I'm not being disrespectful to whatever belief that is, but we all rise, we are kangaroos. All right.
What did England have? They just sang the national anthem, didn't they?
The reason I'm singing Go, Go, Lebanon, because that's what they're all singing in the dressing rooms after they thrashed. Well, they beat France.
Don't call it a thrashing. They only made 5 more metres than them and won by, 11 points?
Still a bit of an embarrassment for France, though.
I don't know. There was a good number of NRL players in that lineup, and considering that France have picked from the
Catalans
team that hasn't done particularly well this season, then, you know, it's not too bad.
No, maybe not, but Go, Go, Lebanon. You can see what we're all about. Welcome to the Final Hooter. Not just any Final Hooter. It is the Rugby League 2017 World Cup Final Hooter.
It certainly is. And I tell you what, we've got a packed show, haven't we?
Our budget's gone, because when we did this 4 years ago, we had Tony Smith mouthing it.
We did. We did. We also got to about 7 or 8 of the World Cup games as well. And that's not looking on the cards
this time round. The budget won't stretch to Australia. So we're here in the studios with our friends of Radio General, the sound for Warrington Hospital, who are letting us use the equipment to make us sound pro.
Well, I try and sound pro anyway, to be honest, Adrian. I'm not sure how it ends up sounding, to be fair. That's for everybody listening to decide, I think.
We've got a pro to kick off with, by the way. Sad news coming out of South Africa over the last couple of weeks in the passing of the legend, the great Tom van Vollenhoven. We caught up with a legend of rugby league, the voice of rugby league, they're calling the mouth, that's Alex Murphy.
yeah, Alex is the mouth and Ray was the voice.
Ray was the voice. Here's Ray French as he gives us some kind words about the great Tom van Vollenhoven.
So I had the pleasure of playing with him and the difficulty of playing against him when I was with Widnes. But he was a unique talent, and no question about it. I mean, anybody who comes straight from rugby union and tops the try-scoring charts in league in his first 3 seasons, you know, there's got to be something special about him. And again, he breaks the Saints record for try-scoring, 62 in 1958-59, and of course 392 tries in all. Quite incredible, Adrian.
Tremendous record, isn't it? We've seen the footage as younger guys that me and Dave are. You played alongside him, Ray. Just how quick was he in real life?
Well, in real life, he had done 9.8 seconds for 100 yards, would you believe it?
That's
I mean, he was an athlete, never mind a rugby player. He ran in the Commonwealth Games. I think it was in the 4x100 metres for South Africa. He was like absolute lightning. I mean, that was, you know, part of his profile. But it wasn't just his pace. He had this amazing ability to change that pace. And when you thought he was going flat out, he wasn't. It was quite funny. He used to cock his head to the right-hand side, to the side of him, almost leaning his head on his right shoulder. And you knew then he was going into top gear. And my word, you know, he could go round anybody. He could, that change of pace, he could sidestep, he could go round people. And he bamboozled them rather than just sheer pace.
When the news broke last week, Ray, coming out of South Africa, what was your thoughts at that point?
I was very sad, very sad about it. He was a great man, not just a rugby player, but he was a true gentleman, no question about that. He was always concerned about people around him. He would do anything for anybody. You know, whoever you were, you know, I remember him. I did a tour of South Africa with Cowley School here in St. Helens, took them playing rugby league and rugby union, and Tommy came out from Johannesburg to not just see me, but he stood on the touchline, he watched the lads train, he went to a match in Johannesburg with them, and he was that sort of bloke. He was an inspiration, a very humble man, Adrian, very humble man, never talked about his performances or what he'd done or what he did. And he was a true gentleman.
He certainly loved the time at St. Helens, so much so that he kept coming back, even years after he retired.
Oh, he did. It was like his second home. I mean, somebody said to me the other day, he felt as if St. Helens had adopted him, and he wanted to be adopted, and he certainly was. He always came back. And wherever he was always looking after after his mates and his team. You would think that a man who attained such a profile in the game might sort of stand out alone. He didn't. He was a team man. He would always have a drink with you after the match. He was up for any fun, anything that was a bit of a laugh on the coach or going off anywhere. Tommy was part of it. He was a great team man.
You mentioned he was from South Africa, right? It's amazing that the game as a whole hasn't tried to tap into South Africa to find maybe another Tom van Vollenhoven.
Well, it is, but the problem is, South Africa does play rugby league, and there are teams in rugby league, albeit on an amateur basis. And not only Tommy, but if you look through the history of the game, St. Helens alone, with Jan Prinsloo, who came along at the same time as Tommy, he was a South African rugby union wingman, a powerful, very powerful man. Lenny Killeen, Saints, great prolific point scorer. I played with Lenny and Tommy on the wings at the same time. Alan Skeen, remember, one of the best centres I played against at Wakefield Trinity. They were tremendous, but the problem today is that rugby league, unfortunately, is the poor man. It sits in rugby union where the money is, and certainly there is a lot of money and a lot of high wages being paid out in South Africa. So it's very difficult to lure anybody from rugby union now.
Now, Tommy van Vollenhoven was a superstar of the 50s and 60s of the game. If he was playing today, where would he be? Where would he be? Would he be at the top of the game? Would he be the massive superstar that he was back then?
Oh, he would be at the top of the game, there's no question about it. I mean, Tommy was adapt for any era, for any decade, and for any, to a certain extent, a type of rugby. The only thing that I would say, Adrian, under the modern style of the game, which quite frankly can very often bore me with this five drives and a kick. You know, the coaching staff and the whole game seems to be obsessed with huge forwards of great bulk and strength, you know, and fitness, let me be quite fair to them, just driving the ball down, one tackle, two tackle, and then a high kick up in the air, we all chase, and the fullback either catches it or he drops it. There might be a try, there might not be a try. The wingmen do not see as much ball as they did in the 50s, 60s, 70s and 80s.
Now, you mentioned Tommy and came from South Africa. That's hard enough to do, going from one country to another. He's come from another sport as well, so that must be really difficult for him to make that adjustment.
Oh, it's very big. To come from a country as far away as South Africa. And don't forget that Tom's first language was Afrikaans. He was a true Afrikaan, was Tom. So his English wasn't all that good. I mean, it was good enough, but he was of a different country. There's no doubt about that. And he settled down. And of course, if you come to rugby union from rugby union, there's always that element. Are you going to make it? Will you be good enough? How will the team, the players around you react? I mean, I came from rugby union, so I know exactly what, and I signed from rugby union with Saints, exactly like Tom. But the difference with me is I lived 500 yards from Saints' old Knowsley Road ground.
So you could watch the matches.
And I'd watched matches since I was about 5 years of age. My dad and my granddad had watched Saints. My granddad followed the great legendary Alf Ellerby, who was the other famous wing pre-war at St. Helens. So, you know, rugby league was ingrained in me. But yet, it was the most nervous time of my whole rugby league rugby career, and I'm sure it was for Tommy, especially more so, you know, travelling thousands of miles, coming from South Africa, not knowing anybody, not knowing much about the game when he got here. It takes a lot of courage.
You've said that in the past, Ray is one of your heroes. What was it like to play alongside one of your heroes?
Oh, well, it was amazing, really. I'll never forget when I first signed for St. Helens in 61, and Tommy was at the absolute peak of his career, if you like. And I'll never forget the first training night. And to go up there, and you go into that, you had to walk into that little dressing room. You didn't know how you would be looked at or how you would be taken. And, you know, there's great stars, like people like Dick Hoddart, Vince Corralius, Alex Murphy was in there. Billy Bennion, Brian McGinn, you name it, you know, Murphy Smith, terrific players, Ab Terry, you know, totally international national squad. And you walk in, and your first training session, people are looking at you. And in those days, you know, Saints used to get a crowd of about 400 or 500 just watching the training.
Just for the training?
Just for the training.
Wow.
At Knowsley Road, the training pitch was in front of the club, just as Witnesses one was at the side. And it was crowded, and everybody was seeing who could run fast, who could pass a ball, and this and that. And I'll never forget, though, on that first night, we were walking out, and what happened at Saints was the players went out for 5 or 10 minutes and just had a little bit of a lap round the training squad, a little bit of a few sprints, a few exercises. And you did those yourselves before my first coach was the great Alan Prescott, the prop forward, former prop forward, before Alan would his staff take the coaching session. And I always remember walking down outside, and Tommy Vall said to me, "Ray, would you like to train with me? Come on with me." And I thought, heck, here I was only, 21, I think. Here's my boyhood hero, and he's asking me to train with him. You know, it's something I never forgot.
It's like Roy of the Rovers stuff, that, isn't it, Ray?
Well, it was like Roy of the Rovers. And I had been sort of young Roy of the Rovers when I used to go to Knowsley Road. I mean, I can remember, well, to his first game. What would that be? It'd be 57, wouldn't it? 1957, yeah. Leeds, 23,000 on, and he scored. And coming off, you could hear the Saints fans saying, "He's going to be a good one, this chap. This fella's got something about him." And you could sense there was something special. He's the only man I've ever seen who could go down the touchline, never veer from that touchline, and you seemingly just have about a foot or 18 inches to run in, and yet he could go around people, he could change pace, he was strong, don't forget, he was only about 13 stone, but he was strong, very, very powerful to tackle, every ounce of his body was moving.
So he had a successful career. Now, you've seen a lot of wingers in the past during your time as the voice of Rugby League, right? Have you seen anyone come close to being maybe the next Tom Van Vollenhoven, or is there only just one?
I saw two very good players, and I played against both. One who, sadly, I played against him in the latter part of his career when he was all but 38, 40, and that was Brian Bevan at Warrington. I mean, he was a freak of a player. I mean, if you saw Brian, you would never thought he played rugby. He was so wiry and thin, and just didn't look the rugby player, but he was something absolutely special. And I had the honour. I was down in Cardiff on Friday night, Adrian, celebrating Billy Boston.
Now they're honoured
by the Welsh Rugby Union and Rugby League. And you know, those two they were at the tops. And I also always had a great admiration for a man who, let me say, I first watched him many, many years before, much before he came into rugby league. And I tried to get Saints to sign him, and Saints said no. They went to watch him, said he wasn't good enough. And so I rang Dougie Lawton and said, "Dougie, will you go down and have a look at this lad?" And Dougie did. He rang me back. He said, "Ray, I'm having him." And that was Martin O'Fire.
Wow, there is a modern-day legend.
Yeah, very much so.
Just one last word to mention about Tom Van Vollenhove. One word to describe him, Ray. What is it?
One word...
Describing in one word.
Well, I'd just say humility. I wouldn't give you a word that might say something of him on the track, but I think part of his the success and the favour that he had with the players, with his public and everything, was the man's humility. He would help the game. He would help you. He was so ordinary off the pitch, but when he got on it, he was a superman.
He's going to be sadly missed by the game, isn't it? Our thoughts are with the family of the late, great Tom Van Vollenhove. Moving forward, right? The World Cup started in Australia. England going toe-to-toe with Australia. How do you feel that one went?
Well, it went as I thought. Australia won it. A lot of credit for England. In the performance, especially defensively, for about the first 75, 76 minutes to that last try. And they could take a lot out of it. But it's going to be difficult to, I think, topple them. I'm a little bit concerned about the selections, if you like. I do think that two players in particular from our own area, Stephen Ratchford, who has got pace, and I think Mark Percival, who's got pace and power, I think should be somewhere there or thereabout.
Yeah, I was quite surprised when Bateman got the nod, certainly ahead of Percival. Percival's the out-and-out centre, whereas Bateman... Four Wiggins being utilised in the second row.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would have said Persimmon was an absolute, 9 out of 10 lad. And I like Stephen Ratchford, whether you play him at fullback or whether you play him at standoff. I do think he, even if he came on off the bench, I do think there's a part for him to play. He's got pace. And that is one thing, I think, that the midfield in the England side do lack is sheer pace.
Good solid start for England. Didn't get the result they were hoping for, but worrying time for Scotland and Wales. Two thumpings, to be said.
Well, I think the problem, you see, for Scotland and Wales is what we were talking about when we were discussing Tom Van Vollenhove coming from Rugby Union. There is no one coming from Rugby Union now. I mean, Wales were very, very strong. If you go back to... when I watched as a kid in the late 40s and the 50s, a team like St Helens, they would have 6-7 Welshmen in their team. Llewellyn, Gullick, Constance, George Parsons, Ray Cale, that was just in one team. They were absolutely cracking players, and that was all over. And you had Scottish players as well, like Dave Valentine, I remember the loose forward at Huddersfield. These were not just good players. These were real, genuine stars who made the game. Now, Rugby Union has more money than Rugby League. And you're talking about, the likes of Andy Farrell's lad and that Joshua Joseph and company. I mean, they're on half a million to $750,000 a season.
So they're obviously struggling to get their numbers in, and they certainly struggled at the weekend. Papua New Guinea looked absolutely sensational.
Oh, Papua New Guinea, they are. I mean, I watched the match or the highlights on TV, and I've actually been there. I've covered quite a few matches there for BBC television in midair, and the atmosphere, Adrian, is unbelievable. It really is unbelievable. It's packed. Some of those people will have walked 400 to 500 miles. I really mean it. The whole tribes, many of them who live in the jungle, and the clearing, don't live in the city or the town. The whole tribe, when I was doing the broadcast, the whole tribe would get up and walk and pitch camp for a week or a fortnight just to get to the match. And then you can imagine the problems they had, the trouble they had if they couldn't get in. They used to climb up the trees outside the ground. I remember them backing lorries into the trees in a place called Rabaul. And people just falling out of the treetops, just getting them down. The passion for the game is like nowhere you will ever see. Even you know in Australia or here or in France or anywhere, it's nothing like the passion that is in Papua New Guinea. It's the be all and end all of their lives.
That win against Rome obviously made the walk worthwhile, wasn't it? And then Tonga, a lot's been said about their squad, and they certainly lived up to the billing with the thrashing of Scotland.
Well, yes, and I think Tonga will have a big part to play. I mean, what has happened there is the lot of the people of Tongan birth who would normally have played for New Zealand on residential qualifications, they haven't done. And so Tonga has got a cracking side, and so has Fiji. The Pacific Islanders, they're tailor-made for rugby league. They love to pass a ball, they like to run, and they are big, huge giants of men. And I do think that Fiji and Tonga, you could have some upsets in this tournament, some big upsets for the first time.
You mentioned some of the guys could have played for New Zealand, but they've gone for the birthright countries. Has that had any effect on New Zealand?
Yeah, oh, it has, definitely. And of course, New Zealand, they do lose a lot of players. They lose players to Samoa, Tonga, Fiji, and they lose an odd one or two now and again to Australia. Because they tend to jump on the residential qualities. But New Zealand will have a good side. They're a strong side. And over there, of course, don't forget, Australia and New Zealand are playing in their backyard. I think one of the semi-finals and a quarter-final is in New Zealand, and I'm pretty sure it will be from the group that New Zealand are in. So they are going to be very, very difficult as well.
Big question on British Rugby League fans, Ray, is can England win it?
Well, they can win it. I think anyone on the day can win a tournament. They can win it. And I do hope they do win it. And I do believe that the coach and the assistants that they've got, you know, like Dennis Bennett and Paul Wellens and company, alongside and amongst the best in rugby league, and who know what they are doing. I do think, in all honesty, just my opinion, I do a little bit of tinkering with the side.
The Feel Better Station for Warrington Hospital.
This is Radio General.
Now, the final hooter.
You know what? I could listen to Ray French all day and night.
Well, that's why I hardly asked any questions, to be honest, because it was just great hearing from him, wasn't it?
The voice of rugby league.
Regaling us with tales of the past and also looking forward to the World Cup.
And I'm very fortunate I work alongside Ray as well on match days. And sometimes I actually go into a trance.
I thought you did that anyway, to
be
honest.
Maybe you do,
right?
That anyway, but I've been at grounds where I've worked with Ray, and I've gone into a trance and thinking, it's Ray French. It's Ray French.
I know. Well, I
sat there watching the game, and all of a sudden you go, there might be an incident, and he'll name check me, and there'd be just like a second of silence where I'm still listening to Ray. Like, oh, I'm at a game. I better start talking. Well, what's happening?
This is why I'm here. This is why I'm here. I've got to talk.
Great fellow is Ray French. Sad to hear about Tom Van Vollenhoven.
One of the greats.
What a great player.
Yeah. I mean, some of the footage. I mean, he could fly, couldn't he?
Wow. Bearing in mind, he would have had a big, heavy, thick cotton jumper on.
They had the big thick balls as well,
big,
didn't
thick
they?
Big balls. Yeah. Hobnail boots, the big heavy boots, and he's motoring on some of the footage I see.
He just flat. You just almost get the point where he's built up enough ground speed, he's going to lift off any second.
Sensational. And we're always getting told in today's modern game that, oh, the game was a lot slower back in them days, but my word, he looked frighteningly fast. And if he could play these days, he'd be just as fast as today's players.
Well, you heard Ray there describing him and saying the only player to come near him is Martin Afaya, of all people.
Yeah.
In the modern era, so that just says, and to be honest, we're saying modern era. Martin himself hasn't played for the last 15, 16, well, 17 years,
Martin's 50 now, so that shows how old it's been, or how long it's been.
Definitely. great to hear from him anyway.
Without a doubt. And he is right. England do need to do a bit of tinkering. A bit surprised at the lineup when they did take on Australia. And that Bateman was in the centres.
I was also surprised as well that Ben Curry got as much game time. Because obviously he's come off the back of a season for Warrington where he's only managed to get out on the park twice, hasn't he?
Yes, without a doubt. It is the Father Hootet. It is on loverubberleague.com. We're at the studios of Radio General. It is not just any old Father Hootet. It is the Rugby League World Cup 2017 Final Hooter.
So
we thought for this one, we'll have a quiz.
Okay, yeah.
Are you ready? Here's the question. The first World Cup took place in France, but what was the year?
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3.
I can see you still thinking.
2, 1, 0.
Struggling.
The answer. The first World Cup took place in France and the year was 1954.
1954? Long ago.
So that's our Rugby League World Cup trivia Rugby League challenge.
So we'll have another one of those next week, won't we?
Yeah. I have to think of another question, though.
I wonder whether I'll be able to beat the buzzer next week. I was really struggling with that one. Really struggling.
Yeah.
I'm sure there must have been people around the hospital or listening into this podcast later on thinking, I knew that. And they were cutting in just a couple of seconds into that 10-second.
Got to beat the 10-second countdown. Back to the action.
Yep.
What did we think of it? Week one done and dusted.
Week one done and dusted. Well, shall I approach this via pools?
Okay.
Not the pies.
other pie companies are available.
Exactly, yeah. But we saw Group A, Australia defeating England 18 points to 4. You've already heard what Ray had to say about it. You've heard what Adrian had to say about it as well. For me, I think it was just a case of they sort of all tired at once around about the 20-minute mark, and for the last 20 minutes of the first half, they were chasing shadows a little bit.
Yeah, I thought Billy Slater was outstanding there. That's because we were giving him far too much time and space on the ball.
What about
Clemmer?
Certainly
on his try.
Clemmer was awesome, wasn't he?
But the thing is, right, we know what Billy Slater's going to do.
He's done it for 12 years, hasn't he?
He's 5 yards away from the try line. You don't stand back and wait for him to make the move. You've got to close the space down.
He made the decision, didn't he, and he sort of went for it. Then we also saw Matt Gillette going over as well, which was just a clever bit of use of space and highlighting Luke Gayle in the line, and he sort of jumped out and didn't quite get him in the first place.
Mentioned one guy we couldn't handle in the fact that it was Slater, but also Cooper Cronk and Cameron Smith just dominated the middle.
To be fair, what about the centre, Josh Dugan, as well? I mean, he ran for 240 plus metres, which is
waiting for the stats to come in.
Yeah, well, you know, whenever I mention anything rugby league, there's a stat not that far away. Yeah. Hashtag Dave Stats.
I thought their kicking game was a lot better than ours as well. When they were kicking it, so we were picking the ball up on our try line half of the time, whereas when we were kicking it, they were picking up on the 30-yard line. So it was a lot easier for them to get inside England's territory,
yeah,
then throw the energy into making the attacks. Whereas for us, certainly in the first half, we were putting so much energy in just to try and get out our half of the field.
You can only do that for so long in a game, can't you, before you drown in the deep end, as they call it. And for me, in the second half, though, we managed to get more even share of possession.
We did.
Roby was awesome around the dummy half area. He's still got a lot to offer, hasn't he?
It's the same old story of Australia against Australia, maybe New Zealand as well. No, we created chances, and we know that we'll do it when we play New Zealand, probably the semi-final stage, if we get that far, which we should do, unless we get beat by Tonga in the quarters, who knows. But anyway, you've got to take your chances, haven't you?
Definitely.
And if you don't, you know for a fact they're going to hit you with one, and that's exactly what Australia did.
I actually thought, though, that England started the game at a great rate of knots.
Great try by McGill for it. I thought he was our best player, by the way.
Technically, that was the best try of the game, I thought. Okay, they had the breakaway right at the end, didn't they, Australia, which I don't think you can really count because England were chasing.
Well, we were on the attack, weren't we? We threw the pass out and Dugan got in the right place and had the pace to go the distance. But yeah, we created chances, didn't take them. I thought we matched him in the middle, other than Clemmer. He just seemed to have the freedom of the park.
He was a right beast.
Even when we tried to get a hand on him, he was just knocking everybody off, wasn't he?
Then if we go to the other game, France against Lebanon, you was chanting...
Go, go, Lebanon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Don't stop. Don't. We want people to carry on listening.
I've been practicing that in the shower all week.
Have you?
Yeah.
It probably sounded better in the shower as well than in the studio. But a great victory for Lebanon. A couple of tries there for Robinson, who looks a real handful on that wing. What did you make of the halfbacks as well? I thought the halfbacks went really, really well.
They did, didn't they? I mean, France were always going to be, well, they were the favourites to win that game. But I thought Lebanon had the proper game plan to undo the French defence. And they built up a lot of pressure in it. And France just wilted in the heat, didn't they?
It's one of those that I was a little bit disappointed as far as France were concerned, because they had a couple of really, really good performances. Bergal on the wing was brave. You got Bastianada as well, scoring two tries. And the fact, I think the difference was Mitchell Moses, wasn't it, the halfback? I thought he was phenomenal on the day.
That's a traditional Lebanese name, that.
Cracking. There's some, well, they had Robinson scoring two tries as well. Yeah. So, moving on to Group B, and I thought that Samoa in the first half were brilliant against New Zealand.
They were, weren't they?
Second half, weight of possession and missed tackles kind of told, didn't they? And
probably a bit more quality within the New Zealand team. Because despite one or two notable absences, they're still a strong team.
Well, you look at it and they've still got Johnson playing for them, haven't they? Who was England's scourge at the last World Cup.
Nightingale's out there, so they're still a decent team.
Nikarima's a decent player, Rapana as well. So Tuivasa Sheck, need I go on?
Exactly.
And interesting for Samoa is that Joseph Poilo, who looked like he was going to get a statue made of him in the USA last time out, he switched sides, hasn't he?
Everyone's like doing it.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
You mentioned in the interview with Ray about Scotland's performance or lack of against Tonga. Disappointing first half.
It was a good performance from Tonga. They lived up to the billing with all the star names that they've been able to get off the New Zealand squad.
And Australia as well.
Australia as well, but Scotland. We did fear for them, didn't we?
We did.
And the first game suggests it could be in for a long tournament.
Jennings got a hat-trick there, who again looks like he's going to be up there with the top strike centres in the world for this particular competition. And also Taumalolo as well from loose forward.
Well, he's probably the best forward in the world at the minute.
Absolute beast. It's no wonder that, is it North Queensland, has tied him to a 10-year contract.
Is that all?
10-year contract worth $1 million a year.
Is that it?
I don't think anybody from Super League is going to be touching him.
I don't even think Leeds or Wigan could afford that.
No, not at all. And great to see Tupou as well, the winger, chipping in for a couple of tries. He's also represented Australia as well. Scotland, though, they weren't to be nil. Danny Addy got over. And he's been one of those guys that, for me, has been playing in the level beneath himself for the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, he's been in the Championship, hasn't he? Obviously lost to Bradford, and now he's with Hawkeye. He will have the opportunity to ply his trade in Super League next season.
Group C, and we've already mentioned it, but Papua New Guinea. I was excited by this. This was absolutely superb. I have never watched a game on TV where the commentators got overshadowed and overawed with almost everything. So every time the sort of noise level went up in the stadium, they were just overawed. You couldn't hear them.
I think the Welsh players were overawed as well, because they were just as bad as Scotland.
I think they wilted in the heat, didn't they? Because by all accounts, it was 30-plus degrees there.
Yeah, I know one or two comments were made on social media about the fact that it was disgraceful they didn't give them a drinks break.
I would agree with that, to be honest.
Stuff like that, but you know, it's the same for both teams. But you could argue that the Papua New Guineans are used to that intense heat, whereas the Welsh guys, my word.
Oh, yeah.
20 degrees and we're wilting over here in the UK.
This is true. This is
exactly
true. So we saw a hat-trick there for David Mead, who cut through from full-back to excellent effect. Again, would you class him as up in almost like the Slater mode?
Yeah, he's a version of it, isn't he? He's been around a few years.
And as well, Reece Martin. Big second rower. I have to admit, I'd not heard of him before, but he's making a name for himself. Two tries and five goals, and he looked an ox every time he took that ball in.
Paul Ayton as well seemed to roll the ears back in that game as well.
He did. He was very good, yeah. Very, very sparky. They used him almost as a second hooker, really, for sort of just mixing it up a little bit. And then they had the likes of Sagiero, who played at Leeds last year, also went on and led Wales a merry dance. So it was a case almost of who didn't. They've got two smart halfbacks there in the Boas brothers.
Whoever goes and plays Papua New Guinea in that environment, they're going to find it tough, aren't they?
I'll tell you what I've decided. I'm putting it on the bucket list, Adrian.
A trip to Papua New Guinea?
A trip to Papua New Guinea, and I have got to sample a match day.
I'll go for a trip to Cardiff then, all right?
All right, okay. Well, while you're doing that, I'll go out to Papua New Guinea, and I'll make myself known amongst the locals.
I've changed my mind. I'll have a trip to Workington.
Well, that seems to be what Liam Price is trying to do at the moment,
yeah,
isn't he?
He's Workington manager.
Trying to entice people that up there and what have you. And they've got a habit, haven't they, over recent seasons of naming coaches a little bit from left field.
He's certainly left field.
And he is, yeah. Because, no other coaching experience that I know of. I don't know whether you know whether he's taken any teams before. But
not that I'm aware of.
I'm sure people out there...
He may have done the academy in his time at Hull or somewhere, but I certainly don't recall him being a head coach of anywhere.
I'm sure that people out there will let us know if we've got our facts
wrong. Good luck, Leon Price.
Good luck, yeah. I mean, he was a decent player, wasn't he? So I'm sure he'll take to the coaching realms. Also, in Group D, we saw Fiji come up with a massive victory against America, but I'm not sure quite on the strength of this American side this time round.
Don't look as good, do they?
No.
Don't look as good.
No. I mean, okay, they got Vi-Vi, so good they named him twice.
Don't get me wrong, the kit's good.
Yeah.
But the guys wearing the kit are not good.
Well,
they didn't look good anyway.
That's a bit harsh. Have they got to play Scotland or Wales at any point?
Yeah, I'm
of this?
Sure they'll fancy the chances there then, won't they?
But I mean, to be fair to Fiji, I mean, they built up that 36-6 half-time lead and just went on and completed the job, didn't they?
It's just a team packed full of big men, isn't it?
Massive men. Born to play rugby league, exactly. Like you heard Ray said before.
Papua New Guineans, they're not big, but they hit you hard.
Right, I tell you who I'm supporting for the rest of this tournament.
Who?
I'm putting on the Emerald of Ireland.
The Emerald of Ireland. What a result.
Fantastic. 36 points to 12 against Italy. And you could tell, because I was watching this via Premier Sports, and they were taking like the commentary feed from somewhere in Australia. And you could tell that the Australian commentary team really fancied the Italy side.
It was a decent team.
It was.
They got a lot of strength and depth there in that Italian team. So a lot of the guys who were wearing the blue of Italy got a lot of Super League, not just Super League experience, but NRL experience.
Well, there was like some Minicello, wasn't there? Mm-hmm. And there was a number of others that have really stood up in the NRL competition over recent years. But Ireland, they got off to such a good start that they just wore them down, didn't they?
Yes.
You got like Liam Kay, who's been doing the business for Doncaster, Lee and Toronto over recent seasons, running in a couple of tries. You got Griggs turning back the clock. Absolutely fantastic.
Well, it'll set them up good, won't it? Because they know they've got Wales and Scotland to come. So they'll fancy the chances of getting out that group now and maybe progressing, who knows, quarter-final stage or even the semi-final spot. Who knows? It all depends on the draw.
Yeah, they'll definitely fancy the chances, won't they? Again, I don't know about you, but I thought that this was Louis McCarthy Scarsbrook's best game in about 12 years.
Yeah, he rolled back the years, didn't he?
He was brilliant out in that second row. Why has St. Helens not been playing him second row when he can
no
move
idea.
Like that?
I have no idea.
Absolutely tremendous. They've got themselves a new strike second row for next season, St. Helens, looking at that.
Yeah, well done to the Irish, hard line to Italy. I'm sure they'll bounce back. I know Steve McCormack's made changes already ahead of the next game, making three changes to the team that was humiliated by Tonga, so they'll be looking for a better result, won't they?
And and also John Key has made three changes to the Welsh side as well, so that three seems to be the magic number, doesn't it?
Keeping you up to date with everything rugby league, this is the Final Hooter on Radio General.
Well, we mentioned that week one of the World Cup done and dusted. How do you feel it's gone?
You know, I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed the rugby on the field.
Yeah.
If there was to be one slight criticism, we're always being told, though, Australians are better at everything. What about some of these attendances?
Some of the attendances weren't that great. No. I mean, first of all, the big game on Friday, Australia versus England.
It's held in a 30,000 capacity stadium.
Should have been a sellout.
Okay, and it was 8,000 short.
8,000 down. I was watching the TV and... you can see the empty seats and thinking, why is this game not a sellout? It's the showpiece, the event for the opening weekend.
I would agree. Is it a case of them not pushing it enough? And then you have the fact that they're playing a number of double headers in this competition as well.
Yeah, not great attendances as well, were they? I mean, if you look in
less than 10,000 over at Cairns.
I was going to say just over 9,200 in Cairns.
And that's a place where when they've took NRL up there, that's been getting 12,000, 13,000.
I mean, we've been told the rugby league mad in Townsville, but to get just over 5,000
for an international,
it's not great.
It's not good. I mean, they get 15,000 when North Queensland play there.
And Canberra's meant to be rugby mad. Again, just 5,500 for the France-Lebanon game.
So that's our moan for the tournament.
decent crowd at New Zealand, 18,000. You'd expect that one, but not been great attendances, have they, so far? And I went on to the Rugby League World Cup 2017 website.
Okay.
Not to buy tickets, because I couldn't afford to go over there.
Could you actually find anything on it?
Yeah, ticket-wise. Well, ticket-wise, I was having a look at what the ticketing prices were. And for some of these group games, you know, when obviously it gave you the price in Australian money, but then when you do the equivalent back to UK money.
Okay.
About a fiver starting price.
Bargain.
Should have been sold out all them games.
You can, and also as well with all the TV footage, I tell you what, it made me want to go out and get a KFC. Other chicken manufacturers are available.
I mean, I know they've got different ideas rather than do this tournament compared to what we were involved with in 2013, but it's the fact the games are only at weekends.
Yeah,
whereas in 2013, they had them in the weekend. See, it made it a proper tournament because it was just going every day was a different match.
We joined the press pack, didn't we, for much of the tournament. And it was excellent. Great. You know, I was living the dream, to be fair. But I think that's the way that you build and keep interest, to be honest.
Yeah,
and I think
that at weekends,
it must be difficult to keep that interest, possibly.
Certainly in the week. But that's our moan anyway.
Okay.
Plus as well, there's not that much publicity over in the UK for it.
No. I mean, the BBC are just showing England games, aren't they? We're not seeing Wales, we're not seeing Ireland, we're not seeing Scotland. You've got to have Premier Sports to be able to view the rest of the World Cup. And it just seems a bit low-key, really.
Okay, the action starts again this Friday. In Group A, sees France take on Australia at Canberra. So hopefully they might get a better crowd for that one.
Come on, you France. I'm not biased.
In the massive Sydney football stadium, it'd be interesting to see how many seats they fill for this one. England versus Lebanon.
Oh, come on, England. Come on. You know you can do it, lads.
That's in Group A. In Group B, New Zealand take on Scotland in Christchurch.
Oh, good luck, Scotland.
And that's on the same Saturday as well. And on the Sunday, Group C sees Papua New Guinea take on Ireland in Port Moresby. So the Irish are in for a rough afternoon there, aren't they?
That's a massive game. In fact, that's the one that, if I miss all the other games this weekend, it's that one that I've got to see.
Italy take on the USA in Townsville. And it's a doubleheader as well, because Fiji play Wales at the same venue.
Tell you what, I wouldn't like to pick winners from a couple of those matches.
Oh, it's going to be tough. Obviously, you're going to go with Australia over France. New Zealand should be too strong for Scotland.
Yeah, I think by about 30 points, to be
England
fair.
Should be too strong for Lebanon, so I don't see any problem there. The real humdinger is going to be that Samoa Tonga one. That's a game of the weekend, that.
To be fair, yeah, that could be World War III, couldn't it?
Anybody could win that one. That is going to be one heck of a match and atmosphere, isn't
there'll
it,
be some,
in Hamilton.
There'll be some big humans going up against each other there, and it's worthwhile tuning in just for the relevant hackers, isn't it?
Can Papua New Guinea get the best of Ireland? Well, the way Ireland opened up, they'll be fancying the chances that won't happen. I'd fancy Italy to beat USA. I wasn't impressed with USA at all.
Okay, so you think they'll get back on the horse, Italy, despite having two members of their squad who've been brawling?
That's good commitment, they're fighting amongst themselves. So at least they must have been disappointed about how things went.
I'm glad you can turn that into a positive.
And it's going to be tough for Wales against Fiji.
Very much so.
Okay. I'm going to go with Fiji on that one.
Okay. So Adrian has spoken. Go and put your pennies on.
Listen,
I'd risk 20p.
I won't even put 10 pence on them tips, I tell you.
Right, as we're reaching the end of the show, it's perhaps relevant the fact that we've seen the Super League fixtures. They've been
already.
The season seems
domestic,
just a bit closer.
Domestic season might be done and dusted, but the World Cup's still on, so you'd have thought the RFL would have waited for the World Cup to finish, but nope. The Super League fixtures are out, so is the Championship. Magic Weekend's back, that's at Newcastle, and so is the Summer Bash. It was rumoured at the end of this last season that the Summer Bash might be thrown away into the history books,
I'm sure that was just James Gordon who raised that.
Are you sure about that?
He kept mentioning it when we've done our shows together. Yeah, so I'm blaming it firmly on James's shoulders, that one.
He's tried to make us look foolish.
We don't need anybody else to make us look foolish, do we, mate?
But it's a cracking start to the Super League season, it's got to be said.
It is. All kicks off on Thursday, February the 1st, when the Super League champions Leeds Rhinos take on Warrington Wolves at the Halliwell Jones Stadium. And the 2017 Grand Final winners will be hoping to start the defence of their title with an away win, whilst new Warrington Wolves head coach Steve Price will be eager to impress the home crowd after taking charge of his first ever Super League game.
Are you reading that straight off the email? It sounds like you are.
I am.
What a way to start the championship. Lee versus Toronto.
Yeah.
What a humdinger of a game that's going to be.
Return of the Rowley.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, and probably about 8 or 9 ex-league players as well. That is going to be a humdinger as well. Also, the League Leaders Shield winners Castleford Tigers opened the 2018 campaign when they travel over to St Helens.
All right, okay.
We need to say it, don't we?
Yeah, go on.
Both Hull clubs begin their season at home. Hull FC against Huddersfield Giants, and the neighbouring Hull Kingston Rovers take on Wakefield Trinity.
Date for your dive for the Magic Weekend. It's going to be the weekend of May the 19th and the 20th of May.
The Summer Bash follows the week after.
It does, doesn't it? But the fixtures for the Magic Weekend are as follows. It's going to kick off with Widnes versus St Helens, Wigan versus Warrington, Castleford versus Leeds Rhinos on the Saturday. And on Sunday, see Salford take on Catalan Dragons, Wakefield versus Huddersfield, and we end with the Humber, or the East Yorkshire Derby. Can't say Humberside anymore. Hull KR versus Hull FC. One major concern about the fixtures there. Great fixtures that they are. I just feel maybe they could have tinkered it a little bit. Maybe they could have moved Salford and Catalans away from the start of the Sunday match and may have them starting Saturday. And probably move the Wigan Warrington game to the Sunday. Because you're going to get everybody a record. I'm expecting a record one day attendance there on Saturday. Might be a few empty seats on the Sunday, though. All depends how many Hull and Hockey R fans turn up.
You and Ray with your tinkering. Unbelievable.
Listen, it's a new buzzword. If Ray can say it, I can say it.
Okay, well, the 2018 Summer Bash sees Barrow against Sheffield Eagles, Halifax against Featherstone Rovers, and Toronto against Leigh Centurions on the Saturday. On the Sunday, Toulouse will clash with London Broncos, Rochdale against Swinton, and Batley against Dewsbury. I would too tinker with this setup as well.
Okay.
Because I would put Halifax and Featherstone on that second day and probably switch Rochdale and Swinton to that first day, but that's just me.
You and your tinkering.
Exactly.
You're copying me and Ray, aren't you?
No. Well, that's my own little tinker, that.
All right, okay. All right, all right.
Right, we're just about done and dusted.
We're out of here.
We're out of here.